The Outspoken Cyclist podcast is supported by the Dodd Camera Company. An Ohio institution in photography for over 100 years, Dodd Camera has stayed right in step with the newest in digital cameras and accessories, as well as offering services such as photo restoration and large format printing. Dodd Camera stores are located in Cleveland, Dayton, Cincinnati, Chicago, and now Columbus in the Oak Creek Shopping Center on Cameron Avenue. If you don't have one in your town, you can find them online at doddcamera.com. At Dodd Camera, the focus is on you. Welcome to the Outspoken Cyclist, your weekly radio connection to bicycles and cycling, as well as fitness and other related topics. The Outspoken Cyclist is a radio show produced by cyclists for cyclists. And now here's your host, the Outspoken Cyclist herself, Diane Lees.
Hello, welcome to the Outspoken Cyclist. I'm your host, Diane Lees, along with Tim McKenna.
Hi, Diane.
Welcome back. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
How are you?
I'm excellent. A little chilly, but it's January.
It's a deep freeze, actually. And it's supposed to yet get warm today, Saturday, and then cold again. And then, who knows, polar vortex. I'm looking for rays of sunshine.
We'll have that, I'm sure.
Actually, one of them appeared on the horizon, and that's the tremendous outpouring of generosity to the family, specifically the kids, of Tom Palermo. I learned this recently. He was actually a software engineer at Johns Hopkins University, in addition to being an excellent mechanic and a frame builder and a very popular guy in the Baltimore area. He was the victim of a hit skip in Baltimore on December 27th. And although the driver returned to the scene of the accident about 20 minutes after it happened, there's a lot of controversy around the crash. The driver is an Episcopal bishop in Baltimore. She has been suspended, but she's been in trouble with the law in the past for other driving infractions. To date, however, the YouCaring.com fund set up for his kids has raised almost $70,000.
That's fabulous.
It is fabulous. It's going to take a lot of money to educate these children. They're very young. I think they're only like 4 and 6. On January 1st, more than 700 cyclists showed up for a memorial ride in a vigil. And in one of the more significant reports on what happened since Tom was killed is information in an article in the Baltimore Sun by a guy named Dan Roddicks, or Roddicks, rather, on January 8th. Roddicks talks about the good that might come out of this tragedy and how cyclists in the Baltimore area are becoming so much more important to the fabric of Baltimore itself. The article is worth the read if you have some time. It's in the Baltimore Sun. You can go to BaltimoreSun.com, News, Maryland. And it was on January 8th. Again, the author was Dan Roddicks. He made some excellent points. So another bright ray of sunshine is the paperwork that was signed this week in Jessamine County, Kentucky, that drops all the charges and fines against Cherokee Shill.
That's great to hear.
It is great to hear. And this evening, we're actually going to be one of the first to speak with Cherokee about the legal proceedings and what she's doing to move on with her life after being in the spotlight, and not necessarily for the good, the better part of 2014.
For somebody who just wanted to ride, she certainly got the spotlight.
Yeah, she did. She's actually moved out of her home and back to Louisville. But we'll hear from her in a few moments. After some news and a break, we're heading out to Seattle. We're going to be talking about Velominati.
Is that conspiratorial cyclist?
Well, it's funny you should say that. It's not really some ancient secret bicycle society. Yes, it does have rules. It has rides. It has its own language. We're going to speak with the founder of the organization and find out about those rules and rides and language, and even about the new rule book published to help define Velominati. As you saw when you looked at their blog site, it is hilarious.
It is. It's great. And it sums up everything so far that, you know, cyclists that we know and some things we didn't know.
Some things we may not have wanted to know. But at any rate, we're going to talk with Frank Strack. He is Mr. Velominati himself. So let's head on down to Kentucky. And once again, welcome Cherokee Schill to the Outspoken Cyclist. Hi, Cherokee. Thanks for joining us on the show this evening. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you too, Diane.
And it is a Happy New Year for Cherokee Schill. Tell us about the situation you found yourself in last year, and then we're going to fast forward to what's happened since then.
Okay. So last year, I ended up having to resort to bicycling to commute back and forth to work, and I started receiving citations for cycling on the road.
And was this a road that prohibits cycling?
No. In fact, it is the most efficient direct route to my work or to my former workplace. And not only that, but it's five lanes wide. There's two lanes in each direction with a center turn lane. So plenty of room for motorists to pass me with no inconvenience to them.
And so you were stopped at one point and given a citation, and that started to snowball into a whole lot of other stuff.
Yes.
Okay. And then the last time we spoke, you actually had been arrested and then were being threatened with jail. So what was the agreement you made? Because you made some agreement at that point, and then they let you, like, out.
Well, actually, what happened was I was cycling to class that day. This was after the judge had ruled against me for the first three citations. I have actually a total of eight citations, I think, if I kept track correctly. But so that particular day that I was arrested, the police officer was the same officer that had cited me before and had testified against me in court. And when he pulled me over, there was nothing going on. Maybe people had called to complain, I don't know, but there was nothing actually happening at that time that he pulled me over that warranted any danger to anybody, let alone myself. When he pulled me over, it was with the intention of getting me off the road. And so they put me in jail for that night. I stayed overnight in jail. I got out the next day around 11 o'clock, and it was on with the contingency of not committing any more crimes. Okay, at this point, I'm considered a criminal now, to not commit any more crimes upon the court hearing. Like, I had to go to a hearing. At the time, I didn't have an attorney. I was without an attorney. So I found a new attorney, and he worked out an arrangement. He filed a motion with the courts to delay any judgments, okay? And he filed a motion of notice to file an appeal. I'm not sure exactly how that works, but basically, he filed a motion which said, we intend to appeal the first three tickets, and asking the court to put on hold the charge of wanton endangerment that I was being charged with, which was their excuse for throwing me in jail. And so everything had been put on hold. Well, the judge asked my attorney and the prosecutor to go to mediation. Judge Booth, okay, I don't know if you all remember back when I was, when the county attorney tried to originally have me banned from US 27.
Right.
Judge Booth is the judge that overruled that and said, no, it's legal for her to be on the highway.
That happened, I think, in August, right?
Correct. So Judge Booth had ruled against the county attorney. Well, there was a lot of things going on, a lot of manipulation happening, and we ended up before a different judge. Judge Oliver is the one who found me guilty on the three careless driving citations.
So now there are two judges involved, but it's the same prosecutor.
Correct. Well, actually, Brian Gettle was the one that had filed the motion to have access to U.S. 27 denied to me.
Okay.
Eric Wright is the assistant Jessamine County prosecutor who basically took it upon himself to see this through.
Okay. Let me remind everybody, we're speaking with Cherokee Schill. We are catching up with what has happened in 2014 when she was arrested and given a bunch of citations for riding her bike illegally, actually, even though the courts began to have sort of a disagreement with that. So let's fast forward to you got a new attorney and some mm-hmm. things started to change. And then this week, you got some really, really good news.
Yes, yes. So in the time period that we were waiting for the mediation to happen, it needed to happen to where everybody could attend the mediation. So we were waiting on a good time for the mediator. We were waiting on a good time for the assistant county prosecutor, Eric Wright, and we were waiting on my attorney's schedule to open up to where they could all get together, and myself included, and sit down and talk about, you know, coming to an amicable solution to this. It took a long time. Like, it was supposed to be within a couple of weeks, like 2 weeks, and we were supposed to have it, but then schedules got changed, and it ended up being over 30 days before we could actually get together and sit down in this room and discuss this. So in that time period, I started doing some research. I really started hitting the books hard, looking at previous cycling cases in Kentucky, what happened, what the political climate was, how laws get made, how judges rule, what goes into making a law. And what I found was very disheartening. So as all this stuff was happening, I had all these thoughts going on in my head and was coming to some conclusions. So we're all in the room together and we start talking, and it's clear from the beginning that Eric isn't going to give us any leeway. He is bound and determined. He thinks he has all his ducks in a row and he thinks all the cards are set in his favor. So we start talking. All right. So he starts saying his piece. My attorney starts saying his piece. Now this new attorney that I got, he was awesome. Let me give you a little background on him. He's a former police detective. He's married to a judge. He went back to school, became an attorney. If anybody knows how the court systems work, it's this guy. So he knew exactly when to punch, when to pull the punches, and what to say. And he had Eric, I mean, just stepping in line. I was so pleased. I was never so happy than when I saw what this guy was doing.
So what did the judge do on January 7th?
Well, what happened on January 7th is the judge signed the agreement that we came to. And the agreement we came to was the county attorney would drop all of the citations, okay? Because remember, we only had the first three heard in court. So all of the other four or five citations got completely dropped, as did the wanton endangerment. That was dropped completely. Now, the first three citations that I lost in court with Judge Oliver, the county attorney agreed to waive all the fees and fines associated with that. And at the end of 2 years, he's going to have those motions against me. My attorney's going to go in and file a motion to have it expunged from my record as though it never happened.
That's a good thing.
Yes.
That's a very good thing.
Yes. So in 2 years from now, it will be as though none of this had ever happened.
What about the other five citations? Did they never? Oh, they never came to court.
No.
Okay.
I kept all those back, because the thing is that Eric was working with the local police to get them to cite me for something that he really needed something to really clench, you know, the clencher. And so he was, I mean, each citation after that was getting more and more outrageous.
Yeah, of course.
And you know, I did, you know, I know a lot of people think that I was telling too much on Facebook, but really I wasn't telling them anything. I mean, when I was talking on there, I was only saying stuff that everybody already knew.
Well, that's probably a good thing. So I know there's more that could have been done and that some people are expecting an appeal, but I know that you have a different way of looking at it. Cycling has been damaged in Kentucky almost irrevocably, but you've decided that you're going to let go of the appeal and not file it because of some things that could happen in the future. Explain why you think in the long run it might actually help cycling and perhaps not just in Kentucky.
Right. So basically the appeal was for me. I was mad. I was hurt. I was disappointed. And I wanted payback. I mean, that was the whole point of the appeal, was to win. And I should have won on the first go round. I should have won. And that isn't the fault of certain people involved. It's some local people didn't do what they should have done. But the point is that there is no precedent set by the way the political climate is in Kentucky, the way laws work, the way things happen, is that it is opinion, it is other people's interpretation of the law. If you have somebody who is knowledgeable about cycling, who understands why cyclists ride the way they do, and they do it, and they understand that it's for safety, then you have the potential for it to have a good outcome. We don't have that here, okay? The even Judge Oliver himself said in court, I don't really know anything about cycling safety, you know? I mean, so we have people who are completely clueless as to what it means to be safe when you're cycling on a especially on a busy road. And so there is the real potential that it could set a precedent that puts cyclists so far to the edge that you are endangering them. And I wasn't willing to do that. I wasn't willing to have my needs met at the expense of cycling.
I think that's a very gracious and altruistic thing to do. You moved out of where you were living. You are now living in Louisville?
Yes.
What are you doing now?
Well, I'm looking for work.
Okay.
I have a lot of energy and I have a lot of hurt feelings and anger. And so what I want to do, I want to channel those negative emotions into a positive direction. And so I'm going to be going back to college and I'm going to law school.
Atta girl. On the right side of the law.
Yes.
Well, and that's a good thing. You know, the world needs people. But yeah, I think that you do have a lot of spunk and you don't want your rights trampled on and cyclists don't want their rights trampled on. How are your kids doing?
They're doing well.
Good.
They like it here. You know, in the beginning, I wanted to stay in Jessamine because the kids were happy there. They had their friends. But, you know, when we lost that case, a lot of people just really turned their backs on us, and it was very hurtful. So we had a lot of harassment. I mean, just trying to get to the grocery store on 25 mile an hour, you know, back roads to the grocery store there was always somebody hollering at us or mocking us, or it just got to be really unbearable.
Well, are you happier now?
Yeah.
Good.
Yeah.
Well, I hope you will stay in touch with us and let us know how things are going. I'm very happy that all of the horrible things from 2014 are behind you. And hopefully 2015 will be an awesome year for you.
I hope so, too. Thank you.
You're welcome. Have a great evening.
Thank you. You too, Diane.
Thanks for talking with me.
Okay. Bye.
Bye-bye, Cherokee. Cherokee Schill joined me from her home in Louisville. Well, Sounds like a better outcome.
Sounds like a great outcome. I certainly didn't expect that when we started this, what, a year ago? Or
it will be a year in the spring, couple months, right, when she first got that first citation. It's pretty wonderful. We're going to take a really, really quick break, and we'll be right back to give you some news. You're listening to The Outspoken Cyclist. We are back on The Outspoken Cyclist. I'm Diane Lees.
And I'm Tim McKenna.
And we're going to do some news. What you got, Tim?
We got all kinds of stuff. As you know, up in over in Las Vegas, we had the CES, Consumer Electronics Show.
Is that one of the biggest shows on the planet or what?
I think so.
Because I think several of our news items this week come from CES.
Yep, there's always good stuff there. And we love high tech when it comes to cycling. The connected cycle is a bike pedal equipped with GPS and GPRS sensors that monitor your movement and act as a basic fitness trainer. The sensors power up and send data, including speed and route, to a connected app once the pedal starts moving. So if you're unfortunate enough to have your bike stolen, the fitness tracker can also help you recover your bike.
Well, that's cool. I like having that. That's a good idea. So also, originally from CES, although this article comes from Bloomberg, and was originally in Business Week, Volvo is moving forward with its cycling auto technology to help keep riders safe. Biking in the U.S., especially in urban areas, is on the rise, and so are cyclist fatalities. According to a recent study from the Government Highway Safety Association, 722 cyclists were killed in 2012, up 16% from 680 in 2011. Now, we don't have statistics, obviously, from 2013 and 14 in this. Anyway, Volvo wants to extend its sterling reputation for safety to cyclists with a helmet that can alert both biker and driver if a Volvo veers precariously close to the bicycle. The car company already has technology built into its new XC90 to detect, warn, and auto brake to avoid collisions with cyclists. That step, Volvo says, paved the way for the helmet, which lights up below the brim or vibrates to warn of a potential accident. Similarly, the driver receives an alert through a heads-up display, even if the cyclist is in a blind spot behind a bend or another vehicle or barely visible at light. So the whole thing works with an app like Strava and Bluetooth. And while the helmet is not the most attractive thing I've ever seen, I tell you what, if it saves lives, I am all forward for it. Yay, Volvo. That's all I got to say.
I think one of the stories that we talked about last year was a seat post mounted device that was similar, that was radar that picked up, you know, vehicles when they were too close and things. But I like the idea of it being incorporated into the helmet.
Well, especially if you get some sort of a visual that says something's approaching.
Right.
You know, it's like right there in front of you under the brim. That's very cool.
So more from CES.
There we go.
We've talked about the Copenhagen wheel in the past.
Which
is an electric wheel that you bolt onto your bicycle. This is the FlyCly, F-L-Y-C-L-Y, wheel that has a 250-watt motor built into it. Hmm. In addition to being able to customize their riding experience through the FlyCly app, cyclists can also use the app to track their riding speed, distance travel, and trip duration. With data gathered by the FlyCly wheel sensors, which measure motion, torque, and heat, and the leveraging of wheels onboard GPS, the app will soon be able to make route recommendations based upon the rider's stated preferences and actual riding styles.
And the Copenhagen wheel is or is not available yet?
And they're still taking orders at this time. I don't think they have it
Have they never shipped the wheel
for the public. Hmm. I don't know about that.
This is from a website called semirad.com. 9 reasons why you should never ride your bike to work. So it's obviously a tongue-in-cheek commentary. The blog semirad.com counts down the reasons you don't want to ride to work. And some of them are pretty clever. you know, they are all the reasons that, of course, we say you should ride to work. For example, number 9, it's too dangerous. Can you imagine being out there on a bicycle with all these crazy drivers flying past you, et cetera, et cetera? Number 8, you have to wear a tie to work or a suit or a skirt. And not only that, it's important to wear your tie, suit, business casual attire from the moment you leave your house in the morning until the moment you get home. There is no conceivable way you could leave clothes at your office and change into them after you ride your bike. So it's those kinds of tongue-in-cheek kind of commentary. And the number 1 reason not to ride your bike to work, you'd have to change your routine. Please give up your 45-minute drive into work, the ride that energizes you for the day ahead. Give up interacting with all those other fun, friendly, courteous drivers on the freeway. Sitting in traffic, road construction, merging, not a chance. So I thought it was pretty funny.
I like that. New cycling team?
Yes, there is.
Just one day ahead of the Australian National Road Race Championships, we're delighted and excited to announce the creation of a new professional women's cycling team, the High Five Dream Team.
That's great.
The Dream Team was born at the end of 2014 when Rochelle Gilmore realized that there were many talented Australian female cyclists in need of professional support, guidance, and direction. You recognize Rochelle Gilmore from Team Wiggle, and it was great to see that she's filled a need and started another women's team.
Well, and there is yet another team, right?
Yes.
Uh-huh. How about our friend Mr. Wiggins?
This is a little sort of a specific team for
But it's still another team. Yes. So Bradley Wiggins has started a new team with sort of the blessings of his other team, which is Team Sky. And it is a team that is meant specifically to prepare for the forthcoming Olympic Games. So he reports that the team is also going to try and crack the hour record in June. So Wiggins announced he would leave Team Sky at the end of April. Team Wiggins, which is sponsored and endorsed by both Sky and the British Cycling, are not affiliated with Team Sky and is operating independently of British Cycling. So I don't know exactly all of the business workings. But he did say, Wiggins said, cycling has given me everything. Now I want to build something to inspire kids and to reach all those people who might be on the fringes of the sport. My message is simple. If I can do it, then so can you. Yeah, maybe. But again, we have another hour record and Olympic gold in Rio. So we'll see how Team Wiggins does.
And I think I did see that the UCI has already certified the team. So,
what's your next one?
Losing weight. Actress Kirstie Alley from Cheers and many other shows,
yeah,
will celebrate her 64th birthday next week, 50 pounds lighter, after taking up cycling to help her hit a weight loss goal she set for herself in 2014. Her goal was to lose 30 pounds, and she was working with the same company that she worked with several years ago, Jenny Craig.
Yeah, she was their spokesperson on TV.
Yep. Her goal was to shed 30 pounds, and she decided to take it one step further by cycling everywhere. She bought a yellow townie bike and rides all over the place. Instead of dropping 30, she dropped a total of 50. So
wow,
that's good to
good
hear.
For her. So our friend, Congressman Earl Blumenauer, he's the Democratic congressman from Oregon, had some interesting things to say on Facebook on the first day of the new Congress. This is a quote from him. At Senator Merkley's swearing-in party, Vice President Biden assures me he rode his bicycle down from Delaware this morning. End quote. I don't know about that, but I do know that the congressman was off on his bicycle to be sworn in. So here's what he said about that. Biking to the Capitol in snow and then running on the mall is a great way to start the day and contemplate the challenges ahead. Off to be sworn in for the new term. You gotta love him, huh? He's the one who wears his bike pin and his trouser bands everywhere in Washington. That's how they know him.
Last story that I've got is, and this is kind of a sobering story.
Okay.
This has to do with, I'm sure everyone's noticed, lower gas prices. There was a South Dakota State sociology professor who analyzed the relationship between gas prices and road fatalities. Now, this is not cycling specific. It's just road fatalities in general. And based on all the data that he found in the past when we've had low prices, when there's a $2 a gallon drop in price of gasoline, they're expecting over 9,000 road fatalities in 1 year, over and above what we would normally expect to see. And that simply has to do with the fact that there's that many more cars on the road because gas is really cheap. Now, the one caveat is that we now have a lot of educated drivers, mm-hmm. and there's also a lot of people that aren't driving no matter what the gas price is. So hopefully we can see that number drop a little bit from that. And there's more data on this story at the Huffington Post is where I found this at. It's an interesting study, and hopefully we'll be able to come back to this at the end of the year and report nothing close to 9,000.
I hope so. Well, my last story is about sort of a nostalgia story. So anybody who had a three-speed growing up and had a Sturmey Archer, you know, little trigger control on his handlebars, it never occurred to me that Sturmey Archer, you know, is still a big deal. But the article comes from bikebiz.com. It was written by Mark Sutton. So evidently, Sturmey Archer is to leave Amsterdam after 60 years. Now, I don't know if I'm going to say the name of this city in the Netherlands correctly, but it's Midrecht, and they are relocating there. Capacity issues have forced the move, with the business stating, quote, "The increase in sales, the greater range of our business, and the expansion of our product range, our current building has long been too small, and therefore we moved to a new building which is four times the size of our current premises. The new European headquarters will be open for business beginning January 12th. I think that's really cool.
That is cool.
That is cool. All right. That's all our news for this evening. We're going to take a real quick break. We'll be right back, and we're going to go talk about Velominati. You're listening to The Outspoken Cyclist.
WJCU, University Heights, from the campus of John Carroll University.
We'd like to thank our podcast sponsor, Dodd Camera, for their support of The Outspoken Cyclist. There is a close relationship between cycling and photography, and we're proud to have this family-owned business as a partner in our show. If you're in the market for photo equipment, want to learn more about taking great pictures, or maybe you're ready to launch your own YouTube channel, visit DoddCamera.com and see what Dodd Camera can do for you.
We are back on The Outspoken Cyclist. I'm your host, Diane Lees.
And I'm Tim McKenna.
And we're going to go talk about Velominati. Hello, Frank. Welcome to The Outspoken Cyclist. Thanks for joining me this evening.
Absolutely. My pleasure.
Well, I want to talk about Velominati. The word is reminiscent of a secret society in the 17th century. What, or more precisely, who are the Velominati keepers?
All right. Well, Velominati is very loosely based on the Illuminati. You're right about that. And it is really just, it started off as a passion project between five friends who just wanted to talk about cycling, and that's really where it's grown from. We've kind of developed into a worldwide community of really passionate cyclists. We're focused very much on the history, the culture, and the future of the sport. It's an interesting combination. It's an interesting sport that way. It's very historical and traditional, but it's also fiercely technological. So it's always advancing, and there's a push and pull between respecting where you came from and embracing the future. So, that's really what we're about. And Velominati is about holding ourselves to a high standard, high level of expectation, being very, very passionate and serious about the sport. But also always, prioritizing having fun and making sure that everybody's enjoying themselves, that newcomers are being brought into the sport and kind of guided by people who are more experienced, that they can learn about the same things that make us love it. So it's a community of passionate cyclists, put it the most simple way.
So what is your role as a Velominatus? Which would be the singular in Latin, as my 3 years of Latin might remind me.
Yeah, that's right. In our made up Latin, Velominati is the plural form of Velominatus, and a Velominatus is really just an individual who's probably a little bit crazy, but very very passionate about cycling and takes great care to pay attention to the details and the history of the sport. There's definitely a certain appreciation for aesthetics, and that plays a big part for us as well. So that's really what a Velominatus is. But you can recognize them, usually by their crazy attitude about the sport, but also about the, you know, what they know and how passionate they are about the sport. A lot of the time, a Volumenatist doesn't even know anything about Volumenati at all. They're just, these are just people who are, you know, born this way and they've always loved the sport. And you don't have to know anything about Volumenati to be a Volumenatist.
Well, we actually have used the term being born with the bicycle gene on our show a lot.
Yeah.
So we understand about that innate passion for cycling. So tell us a little bit about you. You sort of run this website, this blog. It is an incredibly deep and wide and broad spectrum that's on your blog. There's so much going on. I mean, there are songs and there are prayers and there's a book and there's all kinds of stuff.
Yep. So I'm the founder. I'm the originator of the site. I was sitting in my backyard reading a book about the Illuminati and just kind of came up with the idea and set about finding a few friends that wanted to participate. And so the first person I approached was Brett Kennedy. He's over in New Zealand, and he and I really kind of did the big pushing initially to get the whole project off the ground. And then Gianni Andrews, who lives in on Maui, came on board very soon after that as well. And he's just exactly the right amount of crazy and the right amount of genius and the right amount of stupid, you know, to make the spirit of the community just exactly what it should be. So that was kind of the beginning. Then there were three of us. And then Marco Carlson from Minneapolis, he's a very, very old friend of mine. He joined in, and so did Jim Thompson, who's actually was just up the street from me in Seattle, who I met the most recently, about 7 or 8 years ago. And so we just started writing about what we felt like writing, and it really just evolved organically from there. At a certain point, we decided to start cataloging all these different rules that we were always talking about, you know, all these do's and don'ts about cycling. We decided to start cataloging them, and it kind of just grew organically from there. And now it's completely out of control and out of hand. And it's an incredible honor to be involved in this project. And you'll have to tell me what people see in it, because I'm not sure what they do, but it's, we just try to keep the spirit alive of writing about what we feel like and not being too influenced by what we've accomplished, and try to keep the original spirit alive.
I'm speaking with Volumenatist Frank Strack. He's out in Seattle. And if you don't know what we're talking about, you can go to Volumenati.com, Volumenati.com, and you'll see what we're talking about. It's pretty interesting. So I have a sexist question for you. I do not see any women involved in your organization. Is that a truism or is that untrue?
That is untrue. And actually, I take a lot of pride, and I probably give myself more credit than I deserve, in recognizing and supporting women cycling in general. So first of all, there are some very vocal female members of the community. People use pseudonyms, so it sometimes takes a little while to catch on that whether somebody's a woman or a male, although the males tend to make themselves more noticeable in their crudeness mostly.
I wouldn't be so sure. So are women Volumenata?
Yes, a woman is a Volumenata.
See? Wow.
Yep.
All that education coming back to me. I want to talk about a few of the terms that you use that in the Volumenati lexicon. You have kogals, you have keepers, you have the V and the anti-V. Go through a few of these things that would entice people to come out to the site and take a look at what you're talking about.
Okay. Well, it's actually pronounced coggle.
Oh, sorry.
No, it's fine. If I had a better understanding of the English language and its grammar, I would have realized how people would interpret that word.
But when you said it, it made much more sense to me than reading it for me. Even though I looked at your phonetic spelling, coggle makes much better sense because, let's talk about it, it's a cog.
It's a cog.
Okay, go ahead.
That's right. And the Illuminati had cabals, Those were the gatherings of their society, and that's loosely what this is based on. And those are they're events that anybody who's a anybody who's a member of the community, which literally anybody can be, they can send us a note with the idea of an event that they want to organize. And we will put it up on the site, and we'll promote it, and we'll publish the route, and they will be, empowered to do all the organizational aspects of getting that ride together. We do have a few stipulations. We like the ride to be memorable. It can't just be a morning ride and then you're out. It needs to be something you're spending your day doing. So we like to plan on 130 kilometers or more. Ideally 100 or 160 or so is a great number to shoot for. And the idea being that you take off mid-morning and you get back late afternoon, take it easy. It's a social ride. It's not an aggressive ride. And then you make sure you have some beers afterwards to enjoy the new friends that you made on the ride.
Yes, of course. we ride to drink and or ride to eat.
That's right.
Or eat. Yes, right. Okay.
Yeah. Post-ride recovery ale.
Who are the keepers?
So the keepers are just the five of us. So that's the keepers are the actual five of us who do the majority of the writing. We do invite and welcome guest contributors to write articles for us, but the five of us who take the responsibility of keeping fresh content on the site are the keepers of the cog.
Well, and I have to say that the content has for the most part, it has this sort of underlying, even though it's very honest and open, a humor. There's a lot of humor to the site. And it's, you have to know something about cycling to really get it. And so I understand that you're looking at people who are very committed to our sport. And I like that.
Yep.
I like that a lot. So what is the V and the anti-V?
Get too much into it, but because I'll start sounding really totally crazy. But rule five is
rule five. Okay.
The fifth rule. It's pardon the fuck up. So that's rule five. And one of the first things my mom actually commented about the rules was that she really liked the fact that you could say rule five and not have to say the F word. And so that's one nice thing. So we started by just referring to it as rule five. Eventually it turned into the five. And then eventually, we started writing that in as the Roman numeral V, which is also the first letter of the Illuminati and also the central symbol of our logo. So the V is technically pronounced the five, but I find myself even calling it the V, even though that's not technically correct.
But, no, I understand because the V is the Roman numeral five.
That's right. Exactly. And so the five is really just to take on a Star Wars kind of sci-fi analogy there. It's the force that really surrounds us and penetrates us as cyclists. And, cycling is such a difficult sport. There's always pain involved. Even if you're not talking about pain, it's pushing yourself to go out when it's raining or when it's cold or what have you. And that sort of toughness, that's what, when we talk about the five, we're talking about the toughness of being a cyclist. The anti-five is anything that prevents you from reaching your potential of hardness, right? So it's if a friend calls you up and invites you out to the pub and you go drinking instead of riding, that's the anti-five. if you're halfway through a hill and you decide to take it easy and slow down, then that's the anti-five is what's convincing you to do that. And you have to always try to resist the anti-five.
Wow, I get it. So you have recently come out with a book of the rules.
Yep.
Tell us a few of the rules.
Okay, so the rules are, there are 95 of them currently, and these are really just what I was talking about originally, where we started just cataloging all these truths, and a lot of them are tongue-in-cheek, but all these different things that, define the cycling culture as it is. And so we started cataloging them, and they're numbered numerically. And yeah, it's all these different things. It's about the rules are about mentorship. They're about coaching. They're about being hard. They're being about you know, the essence of what it means to be a cyclist. And it's a lot about the aesthetics. If you pay any close attention to cycling as a sport, it is a very, very aesthetic sport. You know, all the pros have their kit just organized just perfectly. Handlebar tape is always clean. Bikes are always kept in good order. Things are always coordinated and matched, but not too coordinated and not too matched. So a lot of it, a lot of the rules start kind of focusing on all the subtle differences that distinguish someone who's well attuned to the sport, that distinguish a voluminatus from, you know, just a regular old casual cyclist.
I am speaking once again with Frank Streich. He is the Velominatus of Velominati.com. And I have to tell you that my partner, Brian, is the one who sort of turned me on to your site. He liked it. I like it. I like it a lot. I think it's awesome. So, well, you also, now what I didn't, you know, I didn't have a whole lot of time. So my on-air partner here, Tim McKenna, told me about your song. And so I actually listened to about 2.5 minutes of your song. It's a rap song, right?
Yes, it is. And that's a community project, believe it or not. That's not something that Velominati did. There's a community member over in New Zealand, and he happens to be a friend of Brett. But he actually created this whole thing, and he got somebody who he worked with, the lady, to do the chorus singing, and he wrote the whole song. He rented some studio space. So that's a white Kiwi that's doing that rapping. You heard it here first.
A white Kiwi.
Yep.
It's hilarious. It's hilarious. And if you don't like rap songs normally, you would like this one just because of the cycling content. You know, it's just really, really good. Do you know Patrick Brady?
I know Patrick Brady, absolutely.
Okay. Do you know his book, Why We Ride?
You know, I have not had an opportunity to read it, but I'm certainly familiar with it.
Well, because some of the things you're saying sort of dovetail with his same feelings, and, you know, you guys are obviously kindred spirits in some way. I want to ask you sort of some technical questions about your site. Do you know how many people call themselves Velominati?
Well, it's hard to say. You know, a lot of the community are what we call lurkers. So they're people that don't necessarily make themselves known. But you know, we get a lot of traffic. We average about 400,000 to 600,000 page views a month, anywhere from 100,000 to, you know, 175,000 individual unique users or visitors.
That's awesome. That is really awesome. Well, there is a lot of stuff out there. Tell us, before I ask you to actually recite it, tell us what the prophet's prayer is.
The prophet's prayer is, that's another kind of one of those things that developed organically. It's that's actually Brett's creation. And the prophet to us is Eddie Merckx, the most successful, hardest, and probably, you know, aesthetic icon of cycling ever. And so he's the prophet and kind of the guidance to us. He's a Belgian, of course, and obviously we have nothing but love and respect for Belgium and the races they have there. Brett actually, I personally am not a religious enough person to know what the original source of the prayer is, but he basically took a Christian prayer and converted it to the prophet's prayer, which is a very cycling specific version of that.
And it is on the site along with your rap song.
That's right. And they're both accessible from the rules page.
The rules page. Do you have another life? I mean, let me rephrase that. Do you do something else besides Velominati now? Or is it a full-time job?
Oh, absolutely. No, it's still a hobby. Yeah. I'm an account manager at a consulting company, which takes a huge amount of time, and Velominati takes a huge amount of time too. So I have a very patient wife.
I guess.
And what do some of the other guys do?
So it's mostly writing. So it's I'm a technologist originally, and so I do all the development and maintenance of the site. I have a friend from a previous life in e-commerce who does all the graphic design, and you know we have I think we have a very good graphical look to the site. So he does that as a favor for me, and so between the two of us, we kind of handle all of that. And then the other four, well, and of course the five writers, so the five keepers, maintain all the content, and you know we share ideas on new features to add, and then we bring those up. For example, we just recently did a whole site refresh, and we, as part of that, we brought in a social networking component to it, so that it gives both vocal visitors to the site and more of the quiet listeners, the lurkers, the opportunity to be able to connect directly and speak and send private messages and follow each other and be able to track the comments and so forth from the people that they enjoy following.
So what kind of bike do you ride?
Wait,
I knew that was going to be your question. Doggone it. All right, let's start over. How many bikes do you have?
I've got 9 and my wife has 9. So we came to the conclusion very early on that the key to our happiness was to make sure she always had a slightly nicer bike than I do. So,
you know what? I'm definitely there with you. Right there. That's perfect. So wait, you have a really small house and a very large bike room.
Right.
Got it.
The basement is basically occupied with bikes. There's a little bit of room in there for a washer, and that's about it, and a tiny little workshop.
So can I ask what your favorite – do you have a favorite bike? I know they're for different reasons,
yeah,
so it isn't a really
so
fair question. Okay, let me ask a different one. What was your first bike in this stable?
Oh, the first bike in this stable, my Bianchi TSX. That's a steel Bianchi.
Yep.
Columbus steel.
What was the last bike in the stable?
A Velaforma Strada IR. So that's a full carbon bike, and I'm a big guy, so it's a 61-centimeter frame, and it weighs something like 12 pounds. It's ridiculous.
Are you a Campagnolo-only guy?
I would say yes, except for that my gravel bike and my cross bike are one Shimano and one is SRAM, actually. Campagnolo seems to be a little too delicate for mud.
Yeah, well, yeah. They haven't done any mountain stuff in years and years and years and years.
Right. Yeah.
What would you say your wife's favorite bike is?
Her Cervelo R3SL, for sure.
Interesting.
Yeah, she loves that thing. We've got, I do a time trial up Haleakala, and I had some wheels built that are stupid light, and I'm actually too heavy for the wheels, so she rides those most of the time, and that bike's a featherweight, too. She loves it.
Do you have a tandem?
No, absolutely not. That would be the quickest way for us to split up.
Well, that is, you know, that is the tandem rule. Whichever direction your relationship is going, it's going to go a lot faster on a tandem. Right.
We're two A-type controlling personalities. It's not going to work out well.
So do you have a ride that you are actually putting together in your group of rides this year? I did see the ride listings. But for 2015, is there one that's specifically your ride?
There are a couple. Last spring, I did the Seattle Ronda, which was there are a lot of steep cobbled hills in town here. So I organized 160, 170K ride, something like that, in Seattle that kind of focused on all of those climbs. And that was a ton of fun. We had an absolute blast, and we did that on the day of the Ronda. So that was a great kind of little honorary thing. We also do a Whidbey Island ride. I didn't organize that one, but I did organize the one for the Ronda, and I don't currently have anything on the schedule that I'm organizing myself. And right now I'm focused on helping organize the Keepers Tour Cobbled Classics for 2015, and that's a paid cycling tour that we organize in Belgium, and we go and ride Paris-Roubaix and Tour Flanders and Camp Davelheim and a couple other rides. We do the recon with the pros. We ride a day with Johan Museo. And, you know, it's a crazy fun cycling tour. So I'm very focused on that. That's the first week of April.
And how many people go on that tour?
We limit it to about 12.
And they bring their own bikes to this?
They can. They're certainly welcome to bring their own bikes. I definitely bring my own bike. But we also, included in the cost is actually a beautiful steel CFAC French handmade bike that we offer up for anybody who doesn't want to bring a bike.
Nice.
We get people from all over that join, from Canada and from New Zealand and Australia and from the U.S., you name it, the U.K.
Where on the site is the information about that ride? Oh, it's probably under the rides.
Well, no, it's not under the rides. It's actually, there's a banner right there on the sidebar at the top. And if you click on that, it'll take you straight into...
Cobbled Classics?
Yep, that's the
one. Wow. Wow. You can see I'm looking at the site. I mean, I love that idea. We talked to Andy Hampston not too long ago, and, you know, he's in Europe for a while, and he offers some beautiful rides, too.
Yes,
yeah, this looks like fun. This looks like fun. Well, you know, this has been a lot of fun. Brian was right. You guys are nuts.
We are.
And I think your site is very interesting. Tell people how they can get a copy of the rules.
Hopefully, all you need to do is go to any good bookstore.
If there are any left,
yeah. Right. I'm always very surprised to see it in most of the bookstores around town here. But, you know, another easy way to get it is to jump on Amazon and just look for the rules.
The rules, the way of the cycling disciple. Well, Frank, thank you so much for talking with me on the show this week. I think this has been fun. I wish you a lot of luck. Enjoy your time in Belgium, and we'll just think about that.
Okay, well, absolutely, and thank you so much for having me. This has been a blast.
Good.
And look forward to the next time already.
We will talk again. Thanks so much.
Okay.
Have a good night.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Frank Strack spoke with me from Seattle, Velominatus, keeper of the Velominati.
I'm wondering if we can start to get local chapters around the country for this, because it sounds like a cool group.
If it didn't make sense, you really need to, like, go get a beer or a glass of wine or whatever, your margarita, and plug into the site, because it's got the articles, the gear, the rules, the lexicon, the bikes, the coggles, the rides, the works, the keepers. I mean, it is a very deep, broad, and extensive site. He must work a lot on this, like only all the time.
And 95 rules seems like a lot, but you get to the end and you go, oh, that's it.
What was your favorite rule?
Well, rule five, you can't pass up.
Well, you can't pass it up. You just can't say it on the air.
Right.
Okay.
I like rule five.
You do? I kind of like rule eight. Saddles, bars, and tires shall be carefully matched.
Well, gee, there's a shock.
Now, rule 10 is actually Greg LeMond's rule, which is it never gets easier. You just go faster.
Right.
So those are the kinds of things. Family does not come first. The bike does. That's rule 11. I have a feeling that's not going to go over well with a lot of people. Well, at that note, I think we're going to say that's the end of our show for this week. That was a lot of fun. We are going to revisit with our friend Ellie Blue next week and some other surprises. Thank you so much for listening. We hope you enjoyed our show. And if you have a chance and it's not 7 degrees where you live and you can get outside, go for a ride. Bye-bye.
Thanks for joining us today on The Outspoken Cyclist with Diane Lees. We'll be back next week at this same time with more conversation and news from the world of cycling. If you missed any part of today's show, download the podcast from iTunes or WJCU.org. And you can follow The Outspoken Cyclist on Facebook and Twitter to keep the conversation going throughout the week. The Outspoken Cyclist is a copyrighted production of DBL Promotions with the assistance of WJCU-FM Cleveland, a service of John Carroll University. Thanks again for listening, ride safely, and and we'll see you next week.